Good morning. It is May 17th. Spring is flying by, screaming into a hot summer, and it is another episode of Drive Through HR. This is Michael, and I'm here with Robin. So, Robin, welcome back to Drive Through. How are you doing this week?
I am good. I'm glad to be back, sitting down all week because last week in Vegas for Unleash, I blew out my knee
Oh
and
no.
was hobbling all around the expo hall. And in Vegas, you have to walk 50,000 miles just to go to the restroom. And so, yeah.
Yeah, Vegas and a bum knee are not a good
Yeah,
combination,
it
so
was
hopefully.
not a good time. So going from party to party at night, I had to go really slow, and whoever was walking with me had the misfortune of having to stop and let me sit every now and again to
But I'm well aware of your dedication to get from party to party and
exactly.
participate. So I'm sure you toughed your way through
I
it.
did.
Anyway,
I did.
I would ask you how Unleash was, but we have a guest, and so we'll touch on that another day. So anyway, our guest today is Rick Hamill from Helios. Rick, welcome to Drive Through HR. How are you this morning?
I am well. I'm well. Thank you for having me, and super excited about the conversation today. I will have to say, Robin, one of my other companies that I founded was at Unleash last week, so you probably saw that. That was Atlas is the name of that company, but I saw lots of pictures and lots of fun. So I know you had
It
a lot to do.
was.
So Rick, one of the first things we're going to ask you to do is tell us about yourself. But I was looking at your LinkedIn profile, and it appears as if you're what might be called a serial founder. You founded a few companies. So why don't you start us off by telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do, and then we'll jump into the rest of the discussion.
Yeah, I hear the word serial a lot. Serial workaholic, serial entrepreneur. It all comes together. But before that, actually, I was in HR. So before I even started my first company, I was very much focused on helping people, which is actually how I got into HR. So I had a situation where I was CEO walked in my office and said, well, hey, we just want a government contract. It's a $1 billion contract, and you need to figure out how to hire people to Saudi Arabia, Singapore, and Japan. And I remember calling my payroll provider, and this is 15 plus years ago. I called my payroll provider and said, I can't find the drop down for Saudi Arabia in the platform. And they said, we don't do international payroll. Sorry, can't provide that. So it was a throw in the water to see if you can swim kind of mentality, and it never looked back. Used a platform that used a service provider that said they can do it, realized they couldn't do what I needed. Went to the CEO of that organization and said, look, we need to do it this way. We need to set up our own entities. We need to establish ourselves. Once we did that, we had a number of government contractors who came to us and said, we're having the same issue. Can we use your entities to actually hire our people? And I said, oh, this is a really good business model. 2 years later, I sold my house and investing, especially in starting the organization. That organization was Atlas. And from there, the company grew like wildfire. There were 165 countries. Did payroll for over 5,000 employees around the
Wow.
world, focusing government services, but also in tech and other industries as well. And then last year, I had this inkling that I wanted to do something more. I felt like there was more that I can do based on a lot of the client feedback that I was getting. And it was that 10-year itch. I was getting a little bored. And so I went to the board and said, look, I think I want to do this, and I think we can bring this to the organization. Everyone felt like that was a distraction. We were growing very quickly. We were really doing really well what we were doing. And no one wanted to create a distraction. I said, okay, I agree. We don't want to create a distraction, but I got to do something else. And so I looked at, again, stepping down as the CEO of that organization, made sure they were well established and solidified, but then took money and my own money and invested into Helios and focusing on really supporting the entire life journey and cycle of managing global teams. The world we live in today is very different post-COVID. And I felt like there was an opportunity to really give organizations an equitable opportunity to be able to expand and manage talent around the world without having to feel like they have to be the Googles of the world or the IBMs. So that small business, that mid-sized business who wanted to be able to manage global teams and hire the right talent, I want to make sure they can do it in a more compliant way. Now that came with challenges, right? It came with trying to figure out how to do that and make sure they're fully compliant. And to get your point, making sure employees work in the right country at the right time when they say they're doing that. But my number one goal, full circle, is always coming back to helping people and streamlining and creating equitable opportunities for people. So that's a little bit about me and why I and how I got to Helios.
It's amazing. It is an interesting journey to have come from, being a practitioner, being an HR professional, and then identifying the need and going that path. I think, because too often we see folks that identify the need because they hear there's a lot of possibilities to make money in HR technology, as opposed to I've worked in it and there's where the need come from. I know one of the things that sort of interplays with all of this is the Global Payroll Management Institute. What is that?
Yeah, it's an organization that makes sure that we keep HR professionals and payroll professionals on the same page of what the rules and regulations are. Global payroll is not easy. To be
No.
very clear, the biggest challenge that I find with a number of organizations is we're very used to our own biases, and I can talk for hours on our unique biases. So when you think about how I process payroll in the U.S., you assume, well, that should be the same way that someone else processes it in the UK or how they process it in Nigeria. And it's very different. So the GPA actually really allows them to really have a forum where they can ask questions and see what makes sense and help educate them and to really align them to what the rules and regulations are by understanding where they're at and where they need to be and how they need to manage that. Melanie's done a phenomenal job over there and making sure that she's unified a forum where individuals can connect and be able to support each other.
And there is probably no, I mean, we all work for money, right? So payroll is probably the most mission critical thing there is. And yet most people just kind of take it for granted that their direct deposit's going to show up in the bank on Tuesday or whatever, whatever, right? And that taxes are going to be right, and that, all the things that go on behind the scenes. And you mentioned COVID and how you shifted it in global. I mean, as I mentioned in our pre-show, I hate dealing with payroll. Like, I just want my check and I want somebody else to run payroll for me. And, and love people like you who are into that detailed worlds. But it's so there's that, which has always been there. But then we have all this stuff that's developed post-COVID and transformed the way people want to work. And so can you kind of run us through some of the typical, I don't know if that's the right word, it's probably an understatement by far, typical issues that you deal with now, and like what are challenges that HR people, especially on this global perspective, what are we dealing with today, and how do we start to overcome that?
Yeah, I'll take a step back and actually go back to 2020 because that's actually it's been the catalyst for a lot of this today. When you tell a mass amount of the world to tell they have to work from home, they can't leave their houses, people are going to start to think about their overall environment. So you think about, we had a lot of conversations about mental health and we talked about those things. There were a lot of employees that said, well, if I have to work from home, I'm going to work in a place where I'm comfortable. And that may mean cheaper because they were worried about where their income's going to be if they're going to actually have a job. Some of it may have been in a, they were in New York and they had four or five roommates in their particular house. They realized that everyone's working from home, so now it's loud and I actually can't get things done. So they want to go somewhere that they can have, more private space. And some of those cases, some people went back home. People who were foreigners in certain countries, they want to be closer to family. Family importance actually rose during COVID because of everything that was going on. So people wanted to be closer to the families. And even if you think about it just on a domestic basis, someone may have lived in Illinois and they moved back to Indiana, or someone lived in Illinois and moved back to Texas. Employees were working from home, and employers just assumed, and employees assumed that no matter where you are in the world, as long as you work and I pay you based on a contract, we're fully compliant. And that was actually not the case. There are certain rules and regulations regarding taxes, and also creating nexus for a number of companies depending on where that individual is working. And because those rules were not necessarily explained, because we never had to talk about it before, we were always in offices. We knew that my commute was going to be 30 minutes, and I was going to be in the office, and I'm paying taxes where I'm working and living, et cetera. No one really thought about what happens if I move to Canada and I work in Canada, or can I work in Canada legally? There was a lot of questions that came up with that. And so, what the biggest challenge has been during COVID and post-COVID is we've now gotten used to this work from home, this work-life balance, but we didn't think about the rules and regulations and how it actually can affect employers and employees from that perspective. We see right now a lot in the news, employers are saying, come back to the office, and the backlash is, oh, they don't care about their employees, they don't really care about those things. I don't necessarily think that's true, and I'm not going to say that's for every employer, but I think that it's because there's been a lot of penalties assessed by governments. Because you're creating nexus, they're saying you have an employee that's working in Spain, for example, and you don't have a business here in Spain, so you're not paying the employee legally. You're not employing them, and there's certain rights that they're eligible for in those particular countries or states, et cetera, that you're not giving to them. So we have to penalize. And the employers go, wait, I didn't agree for that employee to live there. I just found out they live there. And now to retain that employee, because you got to remember during COVID, and then there was 2021, we called the Great Recession. So now you can work from home. And now, oh, we found out you live in a different country. Well, I found out that I can live in this country and work for anybody. So I'm going to resign. So I also need this great resignation. And then the employer said, well, we want to retain talent. We can't lose talent. How do we do this compliantly? So it wasn't normally you would say, okay, you move, we can't keep you, have a great day. But then you have this whole situation that happened where you're losing talent. So now you're like, okay, now we have to keep them. So it put more pressure on employers to be able to do that. Now you get into 2022, 2023, 2024, the cycle slightly changed back to the employer, right? And the employer has now said, okay, we can't afford you in this particular country because maybe you're the only one there, or it's a handful of individuals. And now we have to bring people back because we want to make sure we're fully compliant, because we can't manage 50 states, or we can't manage, 15 countries. We only have the resources to manage X amount that we were managing before. And so you're seeing that kind of that culture shift back, and there's a battle between employers and employees and how to manage that. But employers, the biggest issue they're having right now is the compliance. That's not what you see in the news, that's not what you see in the media. But the compliance complexity behind that, because it actually is creating more of an impact to employers in those countries and how they're managing employees around the world or in different states. In addition to that, when you think about the overhead it costs to manage that, burdensome as well for those particular employers. That's where we came in and tried to resolve that. We came in and said, look, we found a way that we can do that. We can come up with an employer record solution. You can hire them as contractors as long as you do it compliantly, or we can help you register your payroll and manage your entire global team in one platform. But the biggest challenge is, how do I do it? Who's going to do it? And am I compliant? And if I'm not compliant, who's responsible for those fees if I don't know what's going on?
I look back at 20, this would have been 2021-ish, and the organization I was working for at the time, we had a request, and we were a consulting firm. We had a request from a client to provide some US-based, we are US-based, but we had a request from a global client to find or have some of our consultants in. They were looking at the UK, Amsterdam, and Spain. And we're sitting in the US. And of course, we don't want to turn down, business for this. And this was a long-standing client, and I think they kind of thought we were bigger than we were to begin with. But it was a lot of that. I had to start exploring, okay, how do we do this? how can we do this? And so it was truly looking at the, who are the employer of record? Can I go down that employer record route and all that kind of stuff? And it ended up not coming to fruition, but I spent several months, to your point, really looking at, we weren't going to bring it in house. We weren't going to, run these folks. It wasn't worth it, but it was a request. It was a global need, from a longtime client. And, at the end of the day, we had to weigh the complexities of the cost to us to kind of do these one-offs for small, and what the ROI, to use my cliche, right, would be if we did that. But it was really interesting to actually kind of just go through that exercise of how we would do that.
It's challenging because it also, when you go into foreign countries, there's complexity that comes with that as well. So you probably looked at, you're probably like, what's a CBA? What do you mean that there's mandatory holidays? What's
What's this mandatory severance stuff? What are you talking about, right?
notice periods? I'm used to have little employment. What's a notice period? And those things are what creates that complexity behind that. And so you add that, and then you add the tax implication behind that. That's where it gets challenging. And so, employers, especially post-COVID, I don't think that no one's actually figured out the perfect kind of balance yet, because it's only been, technically 2.5 years to trying to figure that out. And it's not a one size fit all for all employers. But the issue is that a lot of employers are getting a lot of backlash because they're saying, wait, we don't know what we're doing here. We need to pull back. Employees are going, you don't care about us. And I think that there needs to be a better conversation behind that, which is, hey, we want to make sure we're doing it the right way, because if we do it incorrectly, it also impacts you and your livelihood as well, because we want to make sure it's done right. But that complexity of it, we're talking on a global scale, but even state by state, certain states, I used to jokingly say when I was in HR, that California is its own country.
We still say that. We still say that.
So just even operating on a state-by-state basis, that makes it even more challenging. There's also the rule of thumb that governments always go after the people who have the deepest pockets. So regardless if you didn't know an employee was in a different country or a different state, guess what? The employee may have reported that. The employee may have said this is where they're at, and you should have had your there should have been due diligence on your side to make sure that you're doing it correctly. Now, that's easier said than done, but that's how governments look at it. And so because of that, you're seeing that kind of that pushback, like, wait, we need to make sure we're doing this the right way and how to manage that. And then when you think about it from a payroll perspective, but like that's just compliance, right? So now you're saying, Uncle Sam, or I would say Uncle Julio in Spain, they want to get their taxes. Their taxes that are owed, from that perspective, and then even further benefits that are owed for employees is what creates a challenge. I have a situation with a client right now that I'm consulting with. They had an employee move from the U.S. to Spain. Did not communicate that that person moved to Spain. That employee then got pregnant, and that employee then said, I want to have maternity leave. They said, oh, we can give you maternity leave. Our standard policy is 6 weeks. And then at 12 weeks, if you have a C-section, that's our policy. That's the, company policy. And the employee said, I'm entitled to 4 months minimum in Spain. And the argument was the employee then filed a claim in Spain, not in the US.
Well, that brings to mind the closest I've ever come to these kind of issues was dealing with expatriate employees. We'd send somebody from Belgium to work in Florida or whatever. Or we actually, I was the Florida end, but somebody from Belgium would come to work in a facility for a couple of years, right? And you had all the visa issues and all that, family relocation, equivalency of pay, changeover from like a government, perhaps a government-sponsored healthcare plan or retirement plan, into something different, and as much as it can vary in the US, and you kind of have to cut them a deal individually that covers all those aspects. And it's super complicated to put it quite simply. I mean, it's a months long process, and you kind of have, I'm sure I'm talking, not telling you anything you don't know, but if you've never dealt with it, it like you have to kind of shepherd it along, because there's always things that come up, just like what you just mentioned, a pregnancy or somebody needs to go back to the country early or whatever. But in this case now, we're like the person you just described, you know, hypothetically, that just moved to Spain, they're not like the employer doesn't even know what the laws are, right? In the US or any of this kind of stuff. So they're dragged in. So I guess the question I wanted to ask is, like, you've given some, is there like, I know you can't give like a super specific detail, but is there like a worst case that you've seen or something that employers should never do that you could, you know, and I'm just looking for a horror story, I guess.
Yeah, let me pull out my Rolodex. I think the one that I would probably say is that an employer knowing, I had a client who knowingly knew that they were going to hire someone the wrong way, and then documented that in an email to multiple times to multiple
Oh,
people.
yeah, so.
And I always say that anything that you are not 100% sure about, unless you're reaching out to an attorney, be careful how you document those things, because those things can bite you in the butt from that perspective. We had a situation that came up with a prospect that I'm speaking to right now, and we're trying to figure out how to solve. There are a lot of countries right now that are allowing nomad visas, and you don't need an employer to sponsor that visa. You can just go work in that country on a nomad visa. And so more and more employees are still taking advantage of those things because they come up. Also, a lot of the immigration laws have relaxed, specifically in Europe, since COVID. So if you have a grandparent or a parent that is from Europe or has European citizenship, you can easily get that citizenship. And so now, if I wanted to move to France and I have a grandparent who was from France, I can do that without informing my employer because I'm working from home, and I can still work US hours and I can do that. And so you're seeing a lot of those things that are happening where prior to COVID, it was more my employer had to sponsor, I had to have the legal right to work. And post-COVID, a lot of countries have realized that, hey, we can make it more flexible for people to come into the country, because they come into the country, that's tax dollars that we can get in the future from them. But it's made it so that the employer is not relevant in the conversation as it was even prior to COVID. And so that creates more difficulty from a compliance perspective, because even, you know, the age-old question with independent contractors, for example, once someone realizes that you're an employee, they can still ding you. Even if you're saying, okay, we're going to pay you as a contractor in France, you're acting like this. But again, using the maternity example, that's happened multiple times, where they say, well, I'm entitled to benefits. And the employer says, well, actually, you're a contractor. You're not entitled to those benefits. It's a simple claim, like, I'm an employee. I have an email. You direct my time. I'm actually an employee. I deserve these benefits. You need to pay me. And by the way, now that I filed this claim, you're going to have some penalties behind that from a local government. So there's just a lot that's happened in the last, over the last 3 to 4 years that's made it maybe a little bit more difficult from a compliance perspective. And part of the reason why I created Helios was to help mitigate some of that, the information that employees have to provide, where they're signing into the information, all that's tied into our platform. So, oh, I thought you were working in St. Louis. It says you're in South Africa. What's going on? Are you there for vacation? And then, but we've seen you consecutively work there more than 90 days. We need to have a conversation if you're actually living there or you're moving. It gives a lot more tools for employers to understand that, not to micromanage employees, but to make sure that they're compliant with, you know, statutory rules and regulations, and not creating nexus in those particular countries from a tax perspective. It's to make sure that they're doing things the right way.
And you know, it's interesting you say that, because that is really Michael mentioned the Evil HR Lady group, which is a bunch of practitioners kind of posing questions. And that I'm not in there a whole lot, but when I am, I often see a question of exactly that scenario. We hired a director of accounting in St. Louis, and all of a sudden find out that he's working in Connecticut for 6 months, type of thing. That's just state to state, not even global. What What have you found, Rick, that is sort of a proactive thing that employers or HR professionals can do, should do to kind of address those? You're a nomad. You want to work remote. Yeah, you work from home, but we need to put a box around that a little bit. How should
Document.
employers sort of proactively navigate that?
Documenting processes and procedures. You have to have a policy.
Yeah.
Because employees are nervous about what this means. If I come out with a policy, how are employees going to react? I think employees want transparency. They want to make sure they understand. It's also the responsibility of HR. Our goal is to protect the company as well as employees, because there's ramifications on both sides. So creating clear policies and procedures of what that means. A form to ask questions. I want to move to a different country. How can you support me? There are solutions out there, like a Helios or an Atlas, that can support or facilitate like a or employer of record. But you need to have a policy and procedure behind that, so that employees understand the guardrails that they have to stay within, and what needs to happen if they move out. I will say policy and procedures also do help when, if there's a rogue employee who does make a decision to
Yeah.
move to a country, when you want to defend it with a government, you say they didn't follow this policy, we weren't aware of this,
Yeah.
and then they can say, well, that's the employee's decision, not your decision. But if you don't have a policy, then it's always gray, and then it's always he say she say, right, from that perspective.
Yep.
So building policies and procedures is key. Communicating those policies, not just sending out the email. Town halls are really, really, really powerful, where you have the entire organization in one room, or one Zoom call or Teams call. You can actually communicate, this is our stance on that, and if there's any changes about it, you can follow through the email and acknowledgements through that as well, so that employees are very clear what their roles and responsibilities are when it comes to remote work.
I have a question, Rick, and then I'm gonna ask this question, and then I'll have Robin wrap us up. So the question, and kind of playing off what Robin mentioned again about Evil A. Charlie, like I guess like should. So there are risks and rewards to this for employers, thinking about this from the employer perspective, right? There's flexibility, it can create a lot of opportunity to get talent that you wouldn't find otherwise. So, like on par, what are the best practices for, kind of thinking from both sides of it, being compliant, but should I hire somebody from California if I find somebody that's really good and I've never had an employee in California before? Is that a good idea or a bad, but kind of looking for thoughts around that question.
So I think the diversity of hiring is actually very powerful, and there's a lot of statistics that show that when you hire the best talents, not necessarily that's subject to your postal code, you actually get a lot of benefits from that. So I actually do believe in remote hiring and hiring. I have a saying that say take your talent pool from the thousands to the billions, and you have a better opportunity to be successful because you're hiring the best. Your approach is always hiring the best talent into the organization, regardless of where they're at. The approach behind that is making sure, again, you have the right policies and procedures, having the right technology to support you in that. It's really key. The right HCM, the right EOR provider, the right payroll provider can really only set you up for success, because they'll partner with you and make sure that you understand the rules and regulations and what you're getting yourself into. And then the last thing is just making sure that you have very open and transparent conversations. Ask the tough questions. When I speak with customers, I always tell them, there's no stupid question. Ask me everything, and anything, so that I can make sure it's super clear what you're getting yourself into, regardless of what solution you're onboarding with. But technology, the ability to hire talent around the world, and let me be clear, that doesn't mean I'm saying don't hire in your home countries. You probably have the best talent there too, but don't limit yourself to
Yeah.
just Google and your postal code.
Great answer. Thanks.
Yeah.
Robin?
Yes. Well, the time has flown by again. So I want to thank our guest, Rick Hamill, who has joined us. So, Rick, as we close out, if you could let our listeners know where they can connect with you online, and where they can find out more about Helios as well. And we'll link to those on the site as well, but
Thank you. So I'm a avid LinkedIn follower, so you can follow me on LinkedIn, connect with me on LinkedIn. I love taking questions on there. Again, my Achilles heel is to help people. So if it makes sense, feel free to reach out. I'm happy to answer one-off questions if it makes sense for you. For Helios, you can go to www.helios.io. Again, that's helios.io. And then we are launching officially into September or beginning of September. And so we've had a lot of beta testers on our platform
Fabulous.
who are, they've used multiple platforms out there, multiple solutions. And what I've heard, and this is a quote, what I've heard is that we are truly going to revolutionize the HR industry if we do this the right way. We're really much focused on the client experience. So feel free to follow us on LinkedIn, follow us, get subscribe on our website. More to come, but again, we're here to help people. That's what we want to do. So if we need help, feel free to reach out anytime.
And let me ask this then, sort of as a follow-up, are you still taking beta testers?
We are.
Excellent. Okay.
If you go to our website, you can sign up for our beta test group. And it's really there. We want you to tear it apart. Anytime we have our beta tester kickoff, we say use and abuse us because we want to make sure we're doing it the right way. Right? Don't just become comfortable with something that's good. We want to be great. So
Excellent.
absolutely, we're constantly bringing beta testers.
Wonderful.
Thanks. Thank you, Rick, for being a guest. Really appreciate it. I'm going to go ahead and end the show. So we'll say goodbye, Robin. Have a great weekend. And Rick, hopefully we can chat again sometime.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.